We're holding on Samach Zayin Omud Bey's five lines from the bottom. We started discussing yesterday the case of mashkanta, where a person borrows money and uses his field as collateral for the loan. Where and we said there were various possible arrangements. You have ones that are considered outright ribis, where the other guy is going to be with Malva, is going to be eating the payrus the whole time and not deducting anything from the loan. Then we had the opposite is something which is definitely mutter, which is where we say that after a certain number of years, the loan is going to be considered paid off regardless. And then we had in between, we have various other cases that may or may not be mutter according to different opinions. We talked about kitsusa, where we said there's a couple of possibilities what that means. First, we said that it meant that for the first 5 years, let's say of a 10-year loan, he's not going to be deducting anything from the loan, and then the last 5 years he's going to be giving the loiva all the payrus. So then we said that can be maybe considered like an oris arrangement, and therefore it doesn't have the appearance of ribis, and it would be fine. But we said maybe not. Or we said another possibility of kitsusa would be where he says that the first 5 years he will deduct a fixed amount per year, and the rest of the years he's going to figure out the actual amount of the produce. Anyway, there were various; those were two different types of kitsusa. Then we also had something called nachyosa, which is that he deducts from the loan a fixed amount per year. Now, the thing with that is that there may be a lot more crops per year than they expected. So therefore, there are concerns of ribis. We said it is in principle mutter. However, Talmud Chacham should not avail himself of that so as not to mislead people into thinking that ribis is mutter. So now the Gemara says, Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, Rav Ashi, loy achli b'nach yoster. Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi, if they had something like that, where they had lent somebody money and the other guy used his field as a mashkanta, etc., they would not do this nachyosa thing because they're concerned about ribis. Now we did talk about yesterday. There are the Rambam brings from Halachas Gedolos, and he mentions various opinions of Rishonim that maybe in fact that kind of thing nachyosa is not just also for Talmud Chacham. Maybe that it's actually outright also. And in fact, the Rif holds that at the top of the Omud, at the top of Samach Zayin Omud Beis, Rava had said that it is mutter. However, a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do that. The Rif learns that actually they're arguing with Rava and saying that it is outright also. It's not just a matter of a Talmud Chacham. Nobody should do it, and therefore they wouldn't do that. So the only way they would do is a mashkanta desura, which we said was the kind where we say that after a certain number of years, regardless whether there were crops or not, then the loan is going to be considered paid off. On the other hand, Ravina ochel b'nachyosa, Ravina would eat based on nachyosa, so he held that it's mutter. Now, what about, though, the fact is, even if we say it's mutter, we said that Rava had said that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't do that. So Tosfos says that Ravina didn't want to consider himself a Talmud Chacham. But then he says that, so now what that means is a big question in itself. He doesn't consider himself a Talmud Chacham still. I mean, other people certainly consider him one. The Gilyon HaShas, Rabbi Akiva Eger, actually refers to something over here that the Elyon Rabbah discusses on this in the Halachas of Tisha B'Av. You have in principle a person is allowed to do Malacha on Tisha B'Av, but a Talmud Chacham should be Machmer and not. And in Shulchan Aruch it says that really a person should consider himself as a Talmud Chacham in that regard and not do Malacha on Tisha B'Av. So we see that even that a person should consider himself like a Talmud Chacham where it's going to cause him a loss or something. So the Elyon Rabbah discusses over there that maybe we're only talking about when we're talking physical tsar. But here we're talking about something that causes physical tsar. Here we're talking about gaining in money. And then there are other possibilities as well. The Elyon Rabbah points out that Rambam holds that you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to give yourself the appearance of a Talmud Chacham, even when it's a chumrah on yourself. So maybe Tosfos holds like that. With all that said, Tosfos brings a different girsa that it's not that Ravina would use nachyosa, but rather he would use kitsusa. And we said before we had a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina whether kitsusa is mutter, and very well then Ravina holds like his own shitta that it's mutter. So the Gemara says, Omar Mazutra, my time and demand Ochum Nachyosa. Why does the opinion that says that you can use Nachyosa, why does he hold that such a thing is valid? Where again, we're saying we're going to deduct a fixed amount from the loan per year, regardless of how much the actual crops are. Because he says, Midi Dehavia Sde Achuza. Because you can compare it to the case where the Torah says where a person is Makdish, has Sde Achuza, a field that he inherited from his ancestors in Eretz Yisrael, and he donates it to Hekdish. So the Torah tells us that if he wants to buy it back before Yovel, then he has to pay Hekdish one seller and one punyan per. When it's a Sde Achuza, what we do is we figure out the area of the field. We don't care about the quality of the field. We just go according to the area. Every base core, every area where you can plant a core of grain, which is defined in halacha as 75,000 square amos. If it was a square, it would be about 270 some amos. The Torah tells us right after Yovel, that's worth 50 sloyim, and then afterwards it gets prorated per year at the rate of one sela and one punyan per year. Punyan is 1/48 for the sela. So say for example you were makdishet, and then now it's for example 10 years before Yovel, and you want to buy it back. You're paying hekdish 10 sloim and 10 punyonis. If you're the owner, you're also adding chomish. That's another matter. But anyway, the point is that with Sde Achuza, you're paying according to the number of years per yovel at a fixed rate. Now, Sde Achuza, lav afagavda ka'ochel peirutuva. Now consider all that time that when it comes to a Sde Achuza, hekdish is getting lots and lots of peiris from this field every year until you buy it back. And yes, Omer Rachmana Kaporik La Ba'abo Zuzi, and yet the Torah says that you can be paid for four zuz, with a sela and a four zuz equals one sela. So a sela plus a punyan, which okay, a punyan is a smallish coin, so the Gemara is not considering that. So you're paying hekdish one sela, which is four zuz plus one punyan for every year's payris. Now some years there may be enormous amounts of payris, and some years there may be very little. Nevertheless, it's still allowed, and we're not worried about rivis. Hachanami lo shna. Well, therefore, says Mazutra, it's no different over here. So therefore, it is allowed as long as you're deducting something that it doesn't even have to be that you're figuring out the average amount of payers per year. As long as every time there is a suffix, after all, whether there's going to be payers or not. So therefore, it should be allowed, and there's no problem. There's no problem of ribis. So we see that to buy all the payers for a year for a small amount is not a problem of ribis. In fact, the chidushim amiyuchasim laritva and the Nemuka Yosef point out that in fact we see that the whole concept of a mashkanta even is mutter, because we see in effect that's what you're doing. It's like a mashkanta to hekdesh, and you're deducting a sela and punyan per year. And it's allowed. Umanda also, whereas the opinions that say that it's also, now again, we said according to Rava, a Talmid Chacham shouldn't do it. That doesn't mean it's also, it just means that Talmid Chacham has to be more careful not to give the appearance of doing something wrong. But we said that Rav Kahana and Rav Papa and Rav Ashi said that it's also, and they held, meaning it's outright also, it's not even a matter of a Talmid Chacham or not. Why? Because they say, what's the difference? Omalach, they're going to tell you, the difference is Sdei Achuza Hekdeshi. Because a Sdei Achuza, we're dealing with Hekdesh. Rachmona Ikme Apidion. So the Torah tells us that you can establish it based on Pidion. The Torah is telling you that you can redeem it at such and such a rate per year. And after all, we've learned before that B'dievet, even your Mechal Hekdesh, even Meyam money, even 100 monas worth on a Shavah Prutta, then fine, B'dievet, it's okay. So here, the Torah is to begin with telling you that you can redeem it for less than the value. But here we're dealing with a halva. There you're not talking about, you're not lending hekdesh money. Here you're talking about you're lending money and mechzik ribis, and therefore it has the appearance of ribis, and therefore according to those opinions you shouldn't do it. Okay. More on the topic of mashkanta. The Gemara says, Omer Ravashi, Omerli Sovid Mosim Achasya. The elders, the elder Talmid Chacham of Mosim Achasya told me, my mashkanta, why do we call this arrangement a mashkanta? I'm skipping. Omer Ravashi, Omerli Sovid Mosim Achasya, Stam Mashkanta Shata. A mashkanta, unless otherwise specified, is for a year. Now Rashi says, we're talking about over here, we learned yesterday, when it comes to a mashkanta, we have asra de masalki and asra de loy masalki. We said we have places where even during the term of the mashkanta, at any time the loiva can pay off the loan and say, now I want my field back. Or you have asra de loy masalki. We have places where we have places where you can't do that, where the malva can say, as long as the term of the loan is still outstanding, the loan was supposed to be for 10 years, until the term is up, I'm not required to return the field, and I'm not required to accept payment from you. As we discussed yesterday, not always can a loiva require a malva to accept payment where it's not in his financial interest to. So now when we say stam mashkanta shata, a stam mashkanta is a year. So Rashi learns that we're talking about even in a place, even in Astra de Masalki, the minimum is 1 year. On the other hand, the Ritva says the other way around, that it means in an Astra de Masalki, you can always remove him. What we're saying is in an Astra de Loy Masalki, if we don't specify how long it lasts, then it's for 1 year. Anyway, so what's the relevance? So the Gemara says, "Lamai naftamina." What's the practical outcome of that? De'i ocha lo shata. If the malva had eaten the peiros, had the field and eaten the peiros for at least 1 year, motzi masalik le, then the loiva is able to remove him by paying off the loan. De'i loy, and if not loy motzi masalik le, then he can't do that. Even so, according to Rashi, even in a place where Astra de Masalki, you have to give him at least a year. According to the Ritva, the other way around, we're saying that in Astra de Masalki, you can do it any time. We mean in Astra de Masalki, and they didn't specify how long it's going to be. The Omer of Ashi, and Rav Ashi says another thing, Omerli Sova de Masa Machasya, another thing the elder Taman Chacham, Masa Machasya, told me. Masa Machasya, by the way, was Rav Ashi's native city, and it's where he had his yeshiva. In his times, the yeshiva of Surah was located in Masa Machasya, which some Rishonim learn that Masa Machasya is actually another name for Surah. Others say, and it seems from a Gemara in Beitza, that it's so, that more precisely, Masa Machasya is a suburb of Surah. The Zohar actually tells a whole story that the place used to be called Kfar Tarsha, and one time they had a terrible epidemic over there, and a few of the Chachamim came there to help them out. And they did, and afterwards they got them to improve their ways and do tshuva, and then in token of that, they renamed the city Masa Machasya, which means the protected city, because now that they're going to act the way the Chachamim are teaching them to act, then it'll be protected from such disasters in the future. Anyway, so now Rav Ashi is saying, the elder Talmid Chachamim of here, where I grew up and where I'm the Rosh Hashiva, have told me these halachas. So they told me, my mashkanta. Why do we call this arrangement mashkanta de shchuna gabe? Because he's considered a neighbor of the field. There's no closer neighbor. Lamai nafkamina. What is that relevant for? The din of bar metzra. It's relevant as far as the din of bar metzra. We're going to learn in great detail later on in the masechta, and then in the ninth perek, we're going to talk about the dinim of bar metzra. The din is, in brief, that if you're selling a field, the closest neighbors have first rights to buy that field. And if somebody else goes and buys it instead, the idea being that way it benefits them, because then they have one big field rather than having different fields scattered in different places. So it's beneficial for them. It's called Vosisa Yoshavato. So now, what happens is, if somebody else goes and buys it, then now you have, let's say, Reuven is selling his field. Shimon owns the neighboring field. Now, instead, Reuven went and sold it to Levi. So we're going to talk about there the dinim that Shimon is entitled to go to Levi and reimburse him the amount of the field and take it himself. And Levi can't object, because he can say, listen, you could always take the same money and buy a field someplace else. So we're going to learn the dinim about it in great detail later in the Masechta on Daf Kuf Ches, Bez Hashem. In any case, you were saying the holder of the mashkanta is considered like the neighbor. Um, so, um, So therefore, the Mayan Nafkamina, the Din of the Bar Mitzvah. So it's relevant as far as the Din of the Bar Mitzvah. So Rashi explains, in other words, that now, if later on the Loiva wants to sell it, then the other Bnei HaMetzer, the other neighbors don't have rights over it. Only the Malva does. If the Malva doesn't want to buy it, then they're the next closest Bar Mitzvah. But if the Malva wants to buy it, then he has first rights over it. That's according to Rashi. There are in fact different Rishonim who disagree. And first of all, does this apply only by Astra de Masalki or Astra de Loi Masalki? Does it apply where at any time the Loiva could remove him by paying off the debt? So you have a machlokas within that, but also in addition, the Ramban learns actually that no, he's not considered a bar mitzvah in the sense that the owner of the field can't sell it to whoever was. To whoever he wants. No, all it is that if the owner of the field sells it to the Malva, then the other Balei Metzer can't prevent him. So in other words, it doesn't mean that. So according to the Ramban, it wouldn't mean if Reuven, the owner of the field, does want to sell it to Levi, somebody else who's one of the Bnei Metzra, then Shimon, the holder of the Mashkanta, according to the Ramban, couldn't object to that. Now Rashi says he could. He could say I'm the closest Bar Mitzvah. According to the Ramban, he can't. All it is that the other way around. If he wants to sell it to Reuven, if he wants to sell it to Shimon, then Levi, one of the other Bnei Metzra, can object. And in fact, you have in Shulchan Aruch the Mechaber holds like the Ramban and the Ramah brings the opinion of Rashi and the Rosh. Okay. So the Gemara says, here's some summaries of halachas that we had so far. Amar Rava, less hilchsa loike taushi papunoi. The halacha is not like the tausha of Rapapa that we learned before. We said a tausha was an arrangement where you're saying you're selling goods with the deal that the person is going to pay later on. You're selling them on credit, and he's going to pay a higher price later on according to what the going price is of the thing at the time. We had the example over there where the Papa said that he sells beer in Tishrei, and he charges the Nissan price, where in Nissan it's going to be higher, with the deal that they're only going to pay until Nissan. And Papa had pointed out why that's not an issue of Ribis, because he doesn't need to sell the beer Davka in Tishrei. He could just as well have waited until Nissan. It's not like he needs the money. Nevertheless, we're saying, Rava is saying the halacha is not like that. The loike shtori mechuznoi, the halacha is also not like the shtoris of mechuzah, which we're going to explain in a second. You can't, in fact, so they do these kinds of things in mechuzah, but the halacha is you can't actually do this. The loike hachiri now shoi, and you also can't do a rental of a field of the kind that they do in Neresh. Where, again, we're going to see in the Gemara soon what that is. Chachira, we're going to deal with in detail later in the Masechta. Chachira is basically you're renting your field to somebody, and he's paying you a fixed amount of the crops per year. An oris arrangement is where he's working the field for you, and he's paying you a percentage of the crops every year. So he's almost like, so he's a sharecropper. He's almost like, in that sense, a part owner, because he's entitled to a certain percentage of the proceeds. A choicher is more like a regular renter. He's paying you a certain amount in rent, in crops for rent per year, regardless of how much the field produces. So now in Neresh, they had a certain arrangement like that, which Rav is saying infringes on the dinim of Ribis, and then you can't do that. So what do we mean? Ketaushi papunoi. We mean ketausha de Rapapa. We mean like the tausha of Rapapa that we learned about the other day. So Rapapa had held that when he sells his beer, where they're going to pay him later on in Nissan, they're going to pay him the Nissan prices. So Rapapa had said it's not Ribis, but the halacha is not like Rapapa, and therefore you can't make such an arrangement, because we said over there that Rapapa himself said, from my point of view, it's not Ribis because I don't need the money now. But on the other hand, the Gemara had pointed out over there that the fact is, we could say from the point of view of the other people, it's Ribis because they're giving you something extra for the fact that you're not getting we said over there, Rav Sheshes Breder of Idi said to the Papa that if you look at it from their point of view, then they're giving you something extra for the fact that you're waiting to get paid. So you may not need the money, but from their point of view, it's still Ribis. And so therefore, the halacha follows that for that point. Next, what do we mean shtori mechuznori? What do we mean the shtoris of mechuza? What they would do in mechuza is, so people would people in mechuza were merchants. The whole city was a commercial city. They were people would buy and sell there all the time. So what they would do is, they would so people are buying merchandise. They're giving it to they're making an iska. We're going to start discussing an iska in the next Mishnah. An iska is basically where you're investing money with somebody, and he's managing the money and managing the business. So now what would be is, so they would be buying, so they would be buying merchandise. They would arrange with merchants there or in other places that they were going to sell it, and they're going to split the profits. So they're going to figure out how much profit do we expect. And then what we do is we write out one shtar that says that Ploini owes Ploini X amount, where the X amount includes the original amount that he invested plus the expected profits. So say he gave the guy $100 worth of merchandise. So right off the bat, the guy owes him $100. So now they would say, we expect that you're going to make $20 profit on selling this. Therefore, we're going to write a shtar in the first place that, so this zakfile l'ravcha karna, they include the profit together with the keren, the kasvile b'shtara, they write the whole thing in a shtar. So they would write that you the storekeeper who are going to be selling this merchandise owe me, the investor, $120. So you can't do that. The problem is, who says that in fact there's going to be profit? What if it turns out there's no profit? So then it comes out that you have a shtar written that he owes him 120, where he originally invested with him 100. And that's no good. So in fact, there are actually two different points over here that are also. One is that, and then this is how it's brought in. This is how it's brought in halacha. Number one, you can't do like what they did to say that he owes 120, where it was an initial investment of 100. And the second one is that when you're writing an iska, when you're writing a shtar for an iska, don't write it as a loan. Because it's not a, because an iska is not, it has to a certain extent in halacha the status of a loan, but don't write it as one. Make it clear in the document that it is an iska, that it is an investment, which the implications of that are, it means among other things that so later on we're going to talk about what happens with an iska and in what ways it's different than a loan. So you have to be careful not to do that, because then if you're treating it exactly as a loan, then it's going to have different so that Rambam points out the problem is that if you write it as a loan, then what if the guy dies and the Yodish has the document? He's not going to realize that it wasn't truly a loan, but rather that it was something else, and he may end up collecting ribis with it where he shouldn't. Okay. However, Mar Bar Amema says to Rav Ashi, it's not so simple to say that it's also Abba Oben Ochmi. My father Amema does that. He writes shtoris like that. And also lekame, the difference is, how does he do in order to avoid the issue of ribis when they come to him, mehem and lahu? If they tell him there was no profit, then he believes them, and therefore, so what's the concern? We're writing over here in the shtar that he invested 100, and we're including the expected profit with it. So now we have, in other words, we write a shtar saying he owes 120. But Amema knows that of that, 20 is the expected profit. And if the guy comes and tells him that there was no profit at all, then Amema says, then good, then pay only 100. Now, why would he write the shtar in that way? The Shittim Kubetzis brings from the David that way, if he sees that the loiver is going to lie, and Amema can realize, however it is, whether body language or whatever, that the guy is lying, then he can threaten him. You know what? Listen, I have a shtar here that says you owe 120, and you're going to have no way of proving otherwise. So you may as well tell the truth, and that way you won't get in trouble. So you would do that. So it seems that there's no problem, says Ma'abar Amema. Omalei, but Rav Ashi says, Tenach hecha de isa l'didei. That works out well enough when he himself is alive. Is shochiv, but like we just said from the Rambam, is shochiv v'nafal shtara hamayasmi. What would happen if a memo were to pass away and the shtar ends up in the hands of the yisoimim? And for example, you know what's going on over here. But let's say his other children or somebody else who does this, whose children might not know, what's going to happen? They're not going to know that 20 of what's written in the shtar is in fact the expected profit. They're going to think it's the whole thing, and they're going to collect. They're going to collect the extra 20, and they're going to be collecting ribis. Like Gemara says, that Rav Ashi expressed himself in that way. What if he passes away? This was an example of what the Pasuk calls a mistake that comes from the ruler, meaning the Talmid Chachamim are called rulers, Talmid Chachamim are called kings, and when a Talmid Chacham says something, even if inadvertently, it has an effect. So here, Rav Ashi should have been more careful with his Lashon, and instead, he used this expression, what if HaMeimah were to pass away, and sure enough, V'noch Nafshid HaMeimah, and sure enough, HaMeimah passed away not long after that. So we see that though, a Talmid Chacham has to be extra careful with his words, because his words have tremendous effect, L'mayim. In any case, we said the halacha is not like that, so you're not allowed to do such a thing. Even though we said, on the face of it, you could avoid the issue of ribis, but your yoshim may not, and therefore such a thing is also the way they did it in Bechoza. Okay, then we said a third thing that Rava had said, the halacha is not like chachire narshoi. You're not allowed to do a rental of the kind they did in Neresh, which is the name of a city in Babel. So what does that mean? So Balabatim would lend money to poor people using the field as collateral, and then they would have that they're going to rent the field from the. So now what would happen is they would be renting the field to the poor person for such and such for X number of korim per year. So they'd say, you, Reuven, have borrowed money from me. So now you're using your field as collateral. Fine, I'm renting you this field, and you're going to pay me X amount per year. So to Kasvi Hochi, they write in their documents as follows: Mishkan like Pliny Ara Laplanya, Pliny Reuven has mortgaged his field to Pliny, to Shimon, who lent him money, Bahadur Chokramine, and now he rented it from him. The reason it's also Amos Kna, because when did the Malva acquire the field in the first place? The Aknia Niale, that now he can be Makne, that now he can be renting it out again. The fact is, it's only a mashkante. He doesn't actually own the field yet. So now it seems like ribis ktsutza. He's not doing any tircha in it. And the fact is, it's a chachira, which means it's not even a matter of percentages. That if the field has a bad year, then he's not going to be getting anything. It's a chachira, which means that regardless, unless there are certain extreme events that we're going to learn about in the ninth parak, then always he's entitled to his amount, to his X number of korim per year. So now, therefore, this seems like real ribis. Now Rashi uses the expression, it would be ribis ktsutza. It would be actual ribis daraisa. The Rosh says that maybe it's not actually, even Rashi might not hold, it's not ribis ktsutza. It's at least just Rashi is just using that as a stronger expression, but meaning, in other words, it would be looking like ribis, it would be a vac. Although the Rashba says that maybe Rashi would indeed hold that it is ribis gemura, because it makes it look like when he first borrowed the money that was the arrangement that he's going to do that, and therefore that is classic ribis ktsutza because it was arranged at the time of the law. Anyway, so therefore such a thing is also, says Rava. But the Gemara says, va'idna de kakasvi hachi, the fact is, but we have like this, later on, as a result, the Pashto says, as a result of what Rava said, so later on, the people of Neresh, they still wanted to make this kind of arrangement, but they needed to alter it in order to avoid the issues of Rivis. So de kakasvi hachi, so now they write as follows. They write in the document, we did buy the field from him. The Malva is saying, I bought the field from the Loiva, Vishahina Kama Idni, and it's been by me for quite some time, which means 3 years. So I already have Chazok on it. And already I've been having Paris in it, Benachyosa. I've been having this Nachyosa arrangement that we said before, that we deduct a certain amount from the loan per year. Vahodur Chachra, and only that are we doing the Chachira, only then are we renting it back out to the Loiva. So now in that case, so now it was already by him for 3 years. So now it has, nobody is going to think that there was a loan. There was a loan over here. Nobody's going to think that it was arranged at the time of the loan or anything like that. It seems more obvious that that he had already for 3 years. So therefore, at this point, it's considered his. So now there's no difference whether he continues to work it himself or whether he rents it out. And even if he rents it back to the lender. And the reason is Kadesh Leitino Delos to the borrower, that is, Kadesh Leitino Delos Bifne Levin Shapur Dami. Now, the fact is, we do want, you will find all over Shas, that the Chachamim make Takanas in order not to lock the door in front of Leivin. In other words, we do want to give lenders, potential lenders, an incentive to lend people money. So therefore, we're going to do it that way. And we're going to allow such a thing. Because at least now they've taken away the obvious possibility of ribis. However, the Gemara says still v'lav milsehi. Still, that's not so. Even so, even when you keep it by you for 3 years, it's still a problem of ribis because when you have in the next Mishnah that we're going to have later on, you can have a case where you have, if he himself is eating the Paris, then that's fine. Sometimes there may not be Paris 1 year, so therefore that's fine. Then you have these various cases of mashkantas that we discussed before. But here, it's a chachira. The loiva is required to give him X number of bushels of grain or whatever it is per year. And if the field doesn't produce, he's going to have to actually go and buy himself and bring it to the loiva, to the malva. So therefore, it has much more the appearance of ribis, or maybe even it may be ribis ktsutza, and therefore such a thing would be also. So even this altered method that the people of Neresh are doing is still not working, even though loitino delos bifnei loivin, but ribis is still a consideration. Okay. So now we're going to deal with the matter of iska that we touched on before. So you can have, you have a shutfus, which is a partnership. Two people pull together, their two or more people pull together their money, and they open a business in partnership, and they split the profits and the loss. Now you have something else called an iska, which is where you arrange with somebody else. I'm investing the money. You're going to have in the Mishnah also examples where I'm giving you an animal to raise. You're going to take responsibility for anything that happens. And later on, if there's profit, then we're going to split it. Now the problem is. So the problem is, again, we don't know for sure that there's going to be a profit. And on the other hand, we're telling him that you have to bear all the losses. So you have a problem of ribis over here. Rashi refers to later in the Masechta, the Gemara explains that when you do an iska like this, half the money is considered a milva and half of it is considered a pikadon. Because the reason is exactly that. When you're saying we're going to split the profits, in effect, what we're saying is, so here I'm giving you $100 worth of merchandise. So we're saying that when there's a profit, then we'll split it 50-50. Therefore, he's willing to accept achrayus, full achrayus for half the keren, for 50 out of the 100, that no matter what happens, even if there's an onus, we're going to consider that like a loan. After all, when you borrow money, you're going to pay back the money regardless what kind of onus there was. The other half, he becomes a shomer over. And we say a shomer is potter from certain kinds of things. He's potter from onsin or whatever. So in effect, you have half milva and half pikadon. Now what happens is, though, he's managing the whole thing as a benefit for the guy, for the fact that the other guy lent him money, and therefore you have a problem of ribis. So now we have to deal with how we make an iska without having the issue of ribis. So the whole concept of heter iska is based on that we transform a loan into an iska, and then we do the various things that we're going to learn in this Mishnah and in this sugya about how you structure an iska to avoid issues of ribis. So the Mishnah says, the Mishnah says, you can't set up that a storekeeper that you're going to give payrus to a storekeeper as an iska. And the idea is you're going to tell him, for example, that, look, payrus are currently going, this kind of payrus are currently selling at 4 saw for the seller. So if you buy them in bulk, then you're paying only a seller. Meanwhile, you're selling a little bit of payrus at a time. So therefore, so you're going to gain the profits, and so you're going to sit and then sell them, and we're going to split the profits. So again, the problem is ribis, because the problem is that you're in effect lending him some money, and he's now going and running the business and giving you profits, and therefore he's doing something for you as a benefit for the fact that you lent him money. Or similarly, you can't give money to somebody else as an iska, where he's going to buy the peris and they're going to split the profits. Same problem. Unless he pays the guy as a worker, as we're going to see in the Gemara, what that means exactly. So once you're paying him as a worker, in other words, then he's not running the business for your benefit. Then he's running the business in order to get his pay, and therefore that's more. Similarly, continues the Mishnah, you can't have chickens sit and incubate eggs where the idea is where there's going to be machzah schar, where again they're going to split the profits. What we're going to do is, in other words, it actually describes, we're going to figure out how much are the eggs worth currently. Then we're going to have, where he's going to give the chickens to somebody else. He's going to give the eggs to somebody else who has a chicken who's going to incubate them. So we're going to figure out how much more the chicks that hatch from these eggs, how much are they going to be worth? More than the eggs, and they're going to split the profits. Now, again, you have the other guys is accepting achrayus for the eggs. What happens if the eggs get ruined? What happens if the chicks die? So therefore, you have the same problem of iska. Similarly, you can't figure out as far as calves and as far as colts, horse or donkey babies, same thing, where you're going to figure out the current value. Now you're going to say the same thing. I have a calf now, which is worth I have a newborn calf now, which is worth $10. You are going to raise it for me for the next 2 years or so, until it becomes a mature animal and is ready for work. At the end of that, we're going to figure, at that point, the animal is going to be worth $100, and therefore we have $90 profit, and we're going to split that profit 45 apiece. So again, unless he pays him for his work, and he pays him for the food that he gives the animals. So now in the previous case, Tosfos points out, in the case of a storekeeper, you're paying him kapoyo because he's sitting there all day and working in the store. On the other hand, here, when it comes to an animal, he's not working with the animal all the time. It doesn't take that long to give the animal to eat and drink. So therefore, so you don't have to give him for a whole day's work, but you have to give him schar amoloi. You have to give him for what he's working, and you have to give him schar mezoinoi, the amount that he's spending on food for the animals, and then that avoids the issue of ribis. Or megadlan oisan. Now, by the way, when this shepherd is accepting the animals and he's going to raise them until a certain point, what is that point? Until they reach 1/3 of their expected full growth. Once at that point, then he gives it back to the original owner, and then at that point they split the profits. Because now at that point the animal is big enough to actually start doing work. So actually, when we say Adshiyu Mishaloshin, the Rambam actually learns Mishaloshin means until they're 3 years old, because the Rambam is explaining that we mean until they're ready for work. The Tosfos Yomtiv gives a different explanation. Mishaloshin means when they're one third of their expected growth. At this point, the owner may want to shech them and eat them. We're talking about cows, obviously. And then the meat of them is the tastiest. So that would be when he'd want to do that. So in any case, that's the point. In other words, when you're arranging this kind of thing, I own an animal, you're going to raise it for me. So he raises it until it's mishaloshing, 1/3 its growth, according to Rashi, and 3 years old, according to the Rambam. V'chamur, as far as a donkey, ad shetei te'enes, then he has to continue raising it until it's old enough to be carrying a burden. So that was the usual arrangement. That was the usual arrangement of doing things before they figure out how much everything has been worth and split the profits. And again, we're saying you can't just split the profits straight, because then you have a problem of ribis. So you have to pay the guy for his work, and you have to pay him for the animal feed. So the Gemara says, first of all, when we said in the Mishnah that you pay the storekeeper in an iska, you pay him kapoil. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, kapoil bottle. You pay him like a worker who is like a worker who's bottle. So what does that mean? My kapoil bottle. What do you mean? A kapoil bottle would mean, in other words, that it sounds like it means that he's bottle. That how much would a person want to be paid to sit and not do work? But what do you mean? He's not sitting and doing nothing. The fact is, he has to run the store. He has to bring payers to the store. He has to measure them, etc. He's doing a lot of work in the store, so he's not bottle. So my kapoil bottle. And the answer is, I'm gonna buy a kapoil bottle, shall osa malacha the bottle mina. It means, in other words, you pay him according to what you would have paid somebody who was doing a different kind of work. How much? So Rashi explains, it means, let's say he, for example, till now he was a carpenter or a blacksmith. Now running a store is much easier. So therefore, so how much would he be willing to be paid to do that instead of doing the hard job from before? How much pay would he be willing to take in order to be a storekeeper, which is an easier job, and therefore, and that would be how much you pay him. So not bottle, but bottle shall oisa malacha, because he previously was doing some other kind of work. Now Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, for a number of different reasons, and Tosfos says it does mean bottle legamri. It does mean, in fact, that we mean if he's sitting completely, how much would a person be willing to how much of a pay cut would a person be willing to take to not have to work? And then you do that. And Tosfos discusses that we're going to have in the Gemara, we're going to have different opinions of Tanoim on the subject. So therefore, so this kapoil bottle would be specifically according to the mayor. And then Tosfos goes on to discuss other possibilities of what poil bottle means. And you have, in fact, there is quite a lot of discussion about this among the Achronim. The Marshal has a short statement over here explaining poil bottle, where he explains it. He understands it the way the Tur understands it, which is similar to Tosfos' second explanation. We see how much a person who has no job right now at all, how much would, so this is actually the third possibility. A person who right now is out of work, how much of a salary would he want to be doing this kind of work? So therefore he explains it that way. And then you have the Marsha goes and explain, and so the Marshal finishes off. He says that this is according to the Tur and the Ran. Meanwhile, he says the Machaber wants to say that it means that has a different explanation of kapoil bottle, that it means that how much he would want to take off time completely from work. And the Marshal says that no, that's not really correct. And the Marshal has a very, very long explanation justifying what the Machaber says. Maharam over there on the same page has an even longer discussion. So there's an enormous amount of discussion on this point of what exactly kapoil bottle means. Okay, in any case, the point is you're paying the chenveni like that, and therefore that removes the problem of ribis, because now he's not working for you because you lent him the money or because you lent him the merchandise, but because you're paying him for his time, you're paying him for his work. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah we had a few cases. We had the case of we had the case of making a storekeeper, and we had where you gave him money to buy the payers. So in the one case you give him the payers to sell, and in the other one you're telling him, here's the money, now you go buy payers and go restock your store. So the Gemara says, Utsricha, now we need to be told both of those cases. If the Mishnah had only talked about the storekeeper, meaning where you actually give him the payrus ready-made, you would say, Chenveni, who desagi like a poil bottle, because you could say, by a Chenveni, when in that case, that it's enough to pay him like a poil bottle, Mishumbo, enoughish tircha, because he doesn't have as much tircha. Because he has the payrus ready-made, he has to weigh them and sell them. It's true, fine, but he doesn't have as much work to do. Ava Morris Likach Ben Paris, but when you give him money to buy the Paris, the Nufish Tirche, there it's a lot of Tirche. aim a loy sagile, because poyo bottle, maybe paying him like a poyo bottle is not enough, and you have to pay him the full salary of what you would pay somebody to do such work. Or according to Rashi, it would mean, in other words, that you're paying him as much as he would have for the heavier work that he was doing before, where now he took off from this work and is doing this work instead. And this is part of the reason, this is part of the problem that Tosfos had with Rashi's explanation, and why the various other Rishonim and Achronim have trouble with Rashi's explanation, and they say and therefore they have different explanations of what it means. The Ritva explains to justify Rashi that what the Gemara means, in other words, is that after all, maybe there isn't as much noticeable difference between this work that he's doing now and what he was doing before. So maybe it's not noticeably easier. So the fact is, if he now pays him less, then it's going to look like he's getting away with paying him less because he lent him money. So you would think that therefore, in that case, so you would have to maybe pay him the full amount. The eton of mois likach ben peres. On the other hand, if we only said that the case where you give him money to buy peres, have I'm in a hosmo de boy to poyo bottle, fine, fakeut. In that case, you have to pay him like a poyo bottle, mishum the nofish tircha, because he's going into a lot of tircha to go and buy and sell. But when you give him the peiros ready made, the loy nafish tircha, it's not as much of a tircha. Ema sagile mashu ba'alma. Maybe you don't even need to give him the kapoyo bottle. You just give him a nominal amount. You give him a symbolic payment, and that would be enough. And you could say da filu loy tovel ima elabitzir. And you could say therefore that maybe it would be enough, even if you invited him to dip his bread in your sauce. So we're going to discuss that in the Gemara soon. You have an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that says just that. That says, for example, so what you do is you say, I'm eating over here, and I have a dipping sauce in front of me. Would you like to dip your bread in my sauce? And that would already be considered a payment. Or if he only ate with him one fig, zehu schore, then that could be considered to be his pay. That would be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that we're going to have in a braisa in a minute. So you would think in the Mishnah also that, again, when you're giving him the payrus, maybe that's enough. So therefore, the Mishnah has to tell us in both cases that no, according to the Tana of the Mishnah, you do have to pay him kapoyo bottle, and otherwise you have a problem with ribs. So now let's talk more about this matter of how much you have to pay him, and this whole matter of Iska. So first, Kama Izi Vitana Golan Malin Simon. We have a simon over here for the next few things that the Gemara brings. Kama Izi Vitana Golan. These are keywords from each of the following three dinim, from each of the three following brises that the Gemara is going to bring. I've mentioned before the Sefer Lamnatzeach L'David from Reb David Powder, where he finds each time there's one of these simonim in the Gemara, he tries to find a deeper meaning behind it. He says here, there's a Gemara elsewhere that says that Hashem, we know, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Pegeah B'Nefoshes Tchila, when Hashem has to punish a person, he doesn't first start by harming his body, he starts by taking away the guy's property, and then if he doesn't do tshuva, then it goes from there. We have, for example, by Tzaras, where we see that first Tzaras hits a person's house, and if not, then if he doesn't do tshuva, then it's clothes, and only then him. So here, in a similar way, now the Gemara has an expression elsewhere that, for example, a person has a goat, then Hashem may make that the goat will die or something will happen with it, and that'll be a kapara for his averus. And the same thing, if he's even poorer, and all he can afford is a chicken, then Hashem will take away that asset from him. You have, for example, the famous story with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Eliyahu Anavi, where Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is going with Eliyahu, and they stay by this couple who are great machnisei orchim, and then Eliyahu is davening that their cow should die, and later on he explains to Yeshua ben Levi that there was a gzeirah min hashamayim that the woman of the house should die, and instead he's saying that the cow should die. So it made a financial hardship for them, but at least it saved her life. So here he says, in the same vein, the Gemara is hinting over here, Kama Izi V'Tana Golim Malin Simon, that it's also hinting at how great Hashem is, that he takes the Izi, the goat, or the Tana Goli, the chicken, rather than the person's life. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanon, when we're saying again that you have an iska with somebody, for example, a storekeeper, how much do you have to pay him? Ben meruba ben muat. So whether you give him a larger salary or a smaller amount, then it's mutter divrei a mayor. That's what the mayor says. So Rashi explains that that's the that a mayor means. In other words, you can give him however you Reb Meir is saying you have to have some amount, you have to arrange some kind of salary. So if the guy is willing to accept a lesser salary, then fine, he's willing to accept it. According to Tosfos, what it means is, no, Reb Meir is saying, like you said in the Mishnah, kapoyel batel, it means, in other words, whether originally he was doing a harder job or an easier job or whatever, either way, but it would have to be done kapoyel batel, according to the Meir. Reb Yehuda, I mean, I feel like Tovel Imay Elabitzir. Reb Yehuda says, like we just said, even if he only dipped in sauce with him, so the Balabas is saying, I'm eating, and here is some sauce to dip your bread in. Or you only ate with him one fig. That's enough for it to be considered his schar. And therefore, that avoids the problem of ribs. So now, Reb Yehuda obviously is more makel than Reb Meir, Rashi points out. On the other hand, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, on the other hand, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, and Noisan lo schore mishalem, Reb Shimon is machmir more than any of them. He says you have to pay the guy a full salary, not even you have to pay him the full amount. So what it is like this. According to Rashi, Reb Meir is not saying kapoyo boter. Reb Meir is saying you have to agree with him on something that's going to be called a salary. It can be a little amount, but it can be. Reb Shimon then would be saying what it says in the Mishnah, that it has to be kapoyo boter. According to other Rishonim, according to Tosfos and other Rishonim, it's the other way around. Reb Meir is the Tana of our Mishnah and says kapoyo boter, and Reb Shimon is even more machmir and saying that you have to, and Reb Shimon would be machmir even more so and say that you have to pay him a full salary, not just kapoyo boter. Okay, that's the first din. The second din, the second braisa, Tana Rabbanan, ein shtomin loyasa izin v'loyasa rochelim. When it comes to the shtuma, we discussed in the second half of the Mishnah, we said that you own an animal and you're going to give it to a shepherd to raise, and then eventually, once the animal grows to a certain size, you're going to split the increase. So you can't do a shtuma like that. You can't do an evaluation like that on loyos izim, on goats, loyos rochelim, or on sheep, loy kol davar she'ena osav oichol, or anything else that doesn't actually work. But yet it eats, lemechta, where you're going to then split the profits. Because again, then you have the problem of ribs. When you have an animal that works for its keep, then fine, you can say you're gaining from the fact that during that time you can work with the animal. So therefore, there's no problem of ribs. But where it's just the animal is only eating, is only consuming and not producing, then you have an issue of ribs. So therefore, you can't arrange that the profits are going to be half and half. Unless you pay him schar amolo or mezono, unless you pay him for his work and for the food, like we said in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shaman. Shaman esa izim a mepnei shecholos. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says no. You could do that with goats. It's true that goats don't work for a living, but they do give milk, and the guy can keep the milk. So therefore, that'll serve as schar amolo or mezono. Vesa rochelim, and same thing with the sheep. Mepnei shegozos, because you shear them, you have the wool that you shear from them, the shoat voice, and you also have, when they walk through the river, sometimes you have the water will cause some of the fleece, some of the wool to come loose, and then you can take that. Umotos, and also when the animals walk among the thorns, the same way some of the wool gets ripped off. So all of those can count as schara molo umazone. So fine. Reb Yosef, Reb Yehuda would agree. When you have an animal that doesn't have any of those things, then you can't do lemechta unless you pay him. But he's saying in these kinds of cases, you have the milk, you have the wool, therefore you have a benefit, and that's the equivalent of schar amolo umazono. And v'esatan egolas, and he says the same thing. You'd be allowed to with a hen mipnei she'osav eichelas, because a hen actually works for its keep, because it produces eggs and then it counterbalances that with eating. So therefore, so in all those cases, then you have schar amolo umazonim. But in other words, let's say a rooster, maybe not, because then you don't have, it's not producing any eggs, it's not producing anything useful. So they want to ask the Tanakama, gizav acholav leisipik leschar amolo umazonim. Well, why does the Tanakama disagree with the with Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda? Does he not hold that the wool or the milk would be enough for schar amalei umezonei? So the answer is you're right. Begizav achol of kol amalei pligi. If the deal was that the shepherd is going to be able to keep all the wool that he shears or that falls off or whatever, and all of the milk, kol amalei pligi, then you're right. There would be no question. You don't have to pay him schar amalei umezonei because that's certainly enough. Ki pligi benisyuvi v'toisvi. The argument is only where the arrangement is, as far as the milk, the shepherd is not going to get all the milk. All he's going to get is the whey from the milk. So we're going to say, we're going to take the milk, we're going to make it into cheese. And then when you're making cheese or butter out of it, then you have left, you have this liquid behind. And that liquid also can be used for various purposes. So now the deal is that the shepherd is going to get to keep that. Or the toisri. Or in the case of the wool, all he's going to get is the wool that falls off in the river or when walking between the thorns or whatever. So therefore, so the Tanakhama holds that that's not enough. So that's it. Rashi explains that toisri means the wool that falls off. So the Oruch actually gives a different explanation. You have between the legs of an animal, between the legs of a sheep, wool also grows there. But the fact is that wool, when the animal produces waste, when it produces droppings, they're going to get just stuck onto that wool. So therefore, the shepherds would regularly cut off that wool to keep that from happening. And therefore, that part is called toisri. So therefore, Tanakama sovel like Reb Shimon ben Yochai. So the Tanakama holds like Reb Shimon ben Yochai in the earlier Braisa, where he says you have to pay the shepherd the storekeeper or whatever a full salary to avoid the problem of ribis. So according to him, giving him just the whey or giving him just the wool that got ripped off or whatever is not enough to be that. Therefore, he holds as a problem of ribis. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda holds like his father, like Rabbi Yehuda in the previous Braisa, the Omer, we said, even if he only dipped some food into the Balabas's sauce, so we ate with him only one fig. That's enough to be considered his schar. So therefore, he says that yes, if you give the shepherd only the whey, or you give him only the wool that got ripped off, or only that little amount of wool that's between the legs, or whatever, then yes, that's enough for it to be considered schar amalei umezonei, and therefore that avoids the issue of ribis. Now he's not doing the work for you because you lent him money, or because you lent him an asset, but rather because he's getting something out of it. Another braisa. So far we had the kama, which is kama hu schorai. We had tanig, and we had izi, which was this ein shaman loyse izim. Now comes the third braisa. Tana rabbanan maskeres isha lachavet or tanig golus b'shnei afroichin. A woman. Now this would apply to a man also, obviously, but pashtus back then the women were usually the ones who kept the chickens because they're the ones who are home all day. So a woman can rent out to her friend a hen. Where the pay is going to be two chicks. So for example, so Rachel has a hen. Leah has eggs. Now you can have, for example, she could have bought the eggs from somebody else. She could have had a chicken and it died, whatever it is. So Rachel says to Leah, fine, I'll rent you my chicken to incubate your eggs. And then when the eggs hatch, then you're going to give me two of the chicks as payment. And that's allowed because then again, you have, so now we have, so actually what it is, so I will not only, I'll have, so what it is rather, she tells Leah, you give me the eggs, the eggs will remain by me. I'll take responsibility for them. When the eggs hatch, I'll raise the chicks until they're old enough to give back to you. And then per year, I'm going to get two of the chicks are going to be for me. So there's no lending over here. It's a rental. She's renting her the chicken, and therefore that's not a problem. So that's fine. On the other hand, isha she'omer l'chaverta, but if she says, let's make a partnership, tanegolas sheli or veitzim shelichi, that I'll provide the hen, you'll provide the eggs, ba'aniva at nachlat be'efroichin, and you and I are going to divide. The chicks. Now you have a problem because once you're mentioning division, then it means that it's an iska, and therefore now you have this whole issue of the risk versus the reward. Where again, she's taking responsibility for half the eggs that no matter what happens to them, I'm going to pay off. So therefore, so yeah, you're back to the problem that we said that you have a half milva and a half pikadin, and therefore you have the issue of ribis comes into play. So you can't do that. So Rabbi Yehuda matu, Rabbi Yehuda says it's allowed, as we're going to explain in a second how Rabbi Yehuda is allowing it. Rabbi Shimon oisir, Rabbi Shimon says it's also. So the question is, Rabbi Yehuda like boy schara mother and mazone, according to Rabbi Yehuda, shouldn't she at least get schara mole umazone? The fact is, we're saying that you and I are going to split things, which implies that that we're doing a full split and we're not taking into consideration the fact that she's putting in the effort to raise the chicks. And the answer is ikka beitzim moizros, because inevitably among the eggs you have some of them that are spoiled, not really spoiled, but are not going to they're edible, but they're not going to produce a chick. Nowadays, most eggs we buy in a store, b'chlal, are not fertilized, and they're not going to produce a chick, b'chlal. But even among fertilized eggs, inevitably you have some of them that are spoiled to the extent where they're not going to produce a chick. And then if she keeps those and she's allowed to eat those, well, good. So in that case, she's getting some benefit out of it. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be allowed. Tosfos points out, it's common enough that there are such things. So therefore, even if in one particular batch of eggs it turns out there aren't any, then it's not a problem, because ordinarily there are going to be some. And the fact is, you are allowed to eat them. Okay. And then we have a fourth braisa, Tana Rabbanan, Mokum Shenagu Lahalas Scharkata Flamois Lebehema, in a place where they have so you have like this, you're doing this shtom agolam usyochim that we described in the Mishnah, where you're figuring out the value of a calf or of a baby horse or whatever, and you're gonna say you're gonna raise it for me, and then eventually we're gonna split the profits. So now what we do is sometimes in some places where they do an iska like that, they also the fact is sometimes you have to carry around the animal. When the animal is little, it can't walk on its own legs, and therefore you have to carry it around. So there are places where the minhag is that you give the shepherd, you pay him for that, for the fact that sometimes he's carrying the animal. So in such places, malin, so then you're allowed to, you, so then you have to give him, so then you have to give him that pay. Bein mashanin minigam dina, don't do any different than people do in that, don't do any different than they do in that place. Reb Shimon Gamliel, a shaman egel imoy, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, when you're figuring out this kind of shuma and you're giving animals to a shepherd to raise, you can figure out the calf together with its mother, or siyachim imoy, or the pony together with its mother, meaning, in other words, that Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that if you're giving the shepherd, for example, the mother cow together with her baby, and you're going to raise them together, you're going to keep them together, then you don't have to pay him for carrying the baby, because you don't have to pay, you don't have to carry them. Generally, they're going to follow their mother. And you also don't have to pay him for schara mole umazone, because the mother is able to work and earn her keep. The mother being a mature animal, you're able to do work with her. So therefore, so you wouldn't have to pay him anything. And he says, even in a place where normally they pay the person for carrying the animal, here you wouldn't, because the mother is together with it, and therefore the mother is going to and therefore the baby will follow its mother, and you don't have to carry it around. So the question is, still, doesn't Rav Gamliel require schara mole umazone? Fine, most of the time you don't need to carry the animal, but sometimes he does need to carry it. So at least you should be paying him on that basis. And the answer is ikaglolin. The fact is, even then, you do have an advantage. You are gaining the fact that you have the waste of the animal. You have the dung of the animal, which you can use as fertilizer or whatever. And therefore, so you are getting some benefit from it. And Reb Shimon Gamliel holds like Reb Yehuda and says that therefore that's good enough. You don't need the owner of the animals doesn't have to give him his pay, because his pay will be the glolin, the fact that he's able to keep this waste. The Idah, where the Tanakhama disagrees, and says, because to begin with, the owner is mafkir those. It's not even like he says, I want to keep them, but then I'm going to give them to you. So therefore, in effect, the other guy is getting them from Hefker, and therefore that wouldn't work, and the owner has to give him schar amole umazon. Tosfos points out that earlier in the Masechta we had by Hashavas Aveda, we said glolam afkori mafkilahu. Therefore, that was according to everybody, because there you have a person is getting his animal back. He doesn't care, fine, so I don't get the glolam back. But here we're talking about a person wants to get himself out, paying a schar through glolam. Reb Shimon Gamliel holds that's good enough. The Tanakama holds that it is not. Tosfos actually brings a different girsa in the Gemara over here, and a number of other Rishonim have a similar girsa, which means that the, according to their girsa, it's not a matter of that you're paying him for the carrying you. So it starts out that if it's a place where they usually pay the person for animal for carrying around the animals, then fine. But also you have the other girsa is lahalos vlodis chola that you can have. According to the second girsa, rather, we're talking two different cases. Mokum shenagu lahalas schar kata flamois would be nothing to do with animals, meaning there are places where you have payrus already in a field, you have payrus already in a chotzer, and you figure out how much are they currently worth, how much are they currently selling for, and then you add to it schar kata, that the fact is you have to transport these payrus from one place to another. So in such places, you're allowed to do that. And then separately, you have Labahema. You have where they make arrangements as far as animals. So according to that Girsa, it's not that you have a minute to pay people for carrying around the animals, but rather two different cases. One where you pay the person to carry your payrus, and the other is, or where they figure out in addition to the value of the payrus, the value of the transport of the payrus, and a separate case involving the animals. So within that, Hagoris HaGura points out you have different, the Rosh versus the Tur have different explanations of who exactly stands to benefit from it, and therefore what the relevance of it is exactly as far as the Dinim of Ribis. So the Gemara finishes off. Amar Rav Nachman, halacha k'Rav Yehuda. The halacha is like Rav Yehuda in the previous piece that we said that you don't even need to pay the storekeeper or whatever an actual salary. It's enough that you have him dip in sauce with you, or you give him one gregeris. So the halacha is like that. The halacha k'Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda. The halacha is also like Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda, that in the case where you're giving the animals to a shepherd to watch for you, then it's good enough that you're giving him the whey, or that you're giving him the small amount of wool that comes off loose or whatever. That is good enough. The halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. And in the case of the last braisa about carrying around the animals or whatever, the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, that where the baby is together with the mother, then you don't need to pay him anything separately, because you have the glolim, you have the waste of the animal which he gets to keep. So the halacha is like all of them. This is relevant as far as the dinim of heter iska in particular. One aspect of a heter iska is that you write into the document, remember, where heter iska is you're taking a loan, and you're saying instead of a loan, it's an investment. Part of it is that you write in the document that you're paying the oisik, the one who's running the store or whatever, in this case, the one who's borrowing the money, but you're treating it as an investment, you're paying him a salary. It doesn't need to be a large salary. You can just write in there, I'm paying him a dollar, for example, and that's good enough, and that avoids that aspect of ribis, because now you're paying him a certain amount, and appointed of Yehuda, even tovolim abetziru, gregena sachas is enough, and therefore now he's doing, in effect, you're saying that now he's managing the business for the sake of that dollar that you're giving him, rather than for the fact that you lent him money and are setting him up in business. There's more details to a heter iska than that, but that's one of the details that goes into it.